Genesis 10. You got to visualize that there's this earth place. And there's bunches of people now after Noah. There's bunches of people again. And they're rapidly multiplying. Thank you. Replenishing. There are several people who naturally have become leaders because of their sagacity and ancient wisdom, because they lived before the flood. So we have Noah and Shem and Japheth. Ham isn't too popular.
Really?
Certainly not with Noah.
He's already been cursed by God.
Right, no, but I mean, even the people after him.
Well, he's popular only in that... he predated... I mean, you would be... Can you imagine, like... It would be like in this society if there were eight people in the universe that had come from Mars or something. I mean, that's the kind of respect that they would have. They carried, remember I talked to you before that these were not ignorant cave dwellers. These were men who, before the flood, built the pyramid. We told you, remember when we studied that Enoch built the pyramid more than likely? Enoch, I mean, the pyramid was of such construction that you couldn't, I mean, a hair wouldn't fit between the pieces of the bricks or the blocks on the pyramids. It was optically polished. It was feats that could not be duplicated today. They were not linear brained. They were people who did not even, I mean, we don't have deductive reasoning until Greece, much, much later. These are people who live by intuition, induction. Societies are forming all over the place. Shem and Ham, or Shem primarily and Noah, allegedly they moved to Cyprus. Is that where the Minoan culture was? Mm-hmm. Is it Cyprus? Yeah.
It was in Crete.
Huh?
Around Crete.
Yeah. But we've got civilizations forming slowly but surely all over the face of the earth. Well, all over the face of the earth that it was then known. And we've got pockets of wisdom where people come to for knowledge, and if I'm right, we've got this revelation in the hands of Noah and Shem, the revelation that we've been delivered into. The same things are being taught them. And then we have this guy. His name is Nimrod. And his word, the name of his word means to rebel. And he begins the process of centralizing society, of building walled cities, of building towers so that at the top of the tower, people would always, they would never again have to die by the flood. I mean, that was his nemesis. And so Nimrod is the only one that still has this mystical coat that was made for, he's got two of them. They were the skins that were made for Adam and Eve. Okay. He stole them. He stole them from Shem, is the story. And slowly but surely, as he is in possession of these, the animals aren't afraid of him. He can manipulate animals. He can manipulate lions and tigers. But what he's doing now is he's building a walled city, and its name is Nineveh. Now let's study about Nineveh here a minute. It was the first city discovered. It was under 8 feet of silt from before the flood. In Jonah 3, which we'll study, remember, everybody remember when we read Jonah?
Yeah.
When? Oh, anyway. Nineveh was described as having, in Jonah, there were 120,000 young children. That gives you an idea of the size of one city. I mean, it had many more people, but they had 120,000 young children who didn't know right from wrong. It was before their age of self-awareness. I mean, we're talking like a big, we're talking a big city, right? Millions of people.
When you say it was the first city discovered under 6 feet of silt, you mean it was pre-flood?
Yeah, okay. Nineveh is pre-flood. It was began pre-flood.
Yeah.
Okay, the central city was, there was a large extension to the city outside the walls. It took 3 days to walk the length of the city. It was perhaps 60 miles square with walls that were 100 feet high. They were wide enough that three chariots could go side by side. You got a picture for me, an idea? This is a pretty big place. 60 miles square, 100 foot high walls in some places that were wide enough to have three chariots go side by side. This guy's a big dude, right? Nimrod's an important character. He taught men to centralize. Why? No. What was their incentive?
Oh, the fear?
The fear of the flood.
Come back?
The native fear of the flood and the fear of the animals, or the fear of the unknown. He taught men to centralize. He taught men to build walled cities. And he taught men to reach for the stars. That's what the Midrash says that he did. Now, stop a minute. Let's think of, you're no different. All things are continuing as they were from here.
Fear the unknown.
Nimrod is still teaching men to build walled cities. Nimrod is a type of the Antichrist. He's the physical manifestation of the Antichrist. He's teaching men to build walled cities. He's teaching men to reach for the stars, success in isolation, the isolated self. And he's teaching men to centralize for protection. Not just for protection, but so that the latent power of the soul can be mobilized. No. That same thing is taught today. Look downtown. Like in any city in the world, there's something Nimrod is still teaching us. Now, let's go on. We're going to read about more. We'll see more about Nimrod when we get to Abraham. Look in Genesis 10:5. Why, these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands. The word divided there is parad, which means to spread or to separate. It doesn't mean like, it just means like, if okay, you know, okay, Ed, you get North Africa, and McShane's get Cuba.
Thanks.
That's the word parad, or parad, you understand? Now the word in Genesis 10:25, where it says, for in his days was the earth divided. The word divided there is palag, P-L-A-G, P-A-L-A-G. It means to split or to totally, it means to like split open, but it's really a technical word. It means to place water between the lands. Right. Now, then in verse 10:32, it's parad again, which means that they're spreading it, you know, And by these were the nations divided in the earth. It was like, that. By this was, these were the guys that went out and went to their primary places.
When did the earth actually divide, you know, like all the countries?
That's what I'm, that's what it just says.
Oh, okay, so that's
1025. Now, okay. I have a problem with that, because I can't, there's a part of me that doesn't want to believe that it happened that, in that recent geological history. If the only way that I can live with it, I mean, this isn't something like I could live with, like where I found out that there's pre-Adamic man, so it answered all my questions and da-di-da. This one, the only way I can live with it is to find out that we as a people, and we as, if we're scientists, do not understand enough about time to be able to project backwards. Because if time isn't linear, if there was a place in time, if at the beginning of time, time wasn't linear, then all the measurements that you would use are wrong. You understand? Peleg lived 239 years, and in his days was the earth divided. Now from here, we're going to go on into Abraham in a big way. From the next, from Genesis, well, we're going to study I don't want to go into Genesis 11 tonight.
Well, what did we learn in 10? Did we learn that people multiplied and continents divided and never on the earth?
Can you ask that question?
That's it.
What did we learn?
Genesis 10 should have, let me tell you what. If we were doing this on a linear basis, Genesis 10 should have followed Genesis 11, 9.
You mean it's out of order?
Mm-hmm. It should follow most of Genesis 11:9. It was placed here to complete the history of Noah before going on to Abraham. So this is one of the books that was a floating book that just sort of took care of a whole bunch of stuff. But it should have been, but they wanted to take care of the history of Noah before they got into Abraham. Okay?
So are we going to study about Nimrod?
Mm-hmm. We're going to study about Nimrod. Let's take a break. These readings that we're doing now in Isaiah are for this section about Noah. You understand? And the flood and the things about the flood. Now, the reading, the actual reading for this thing is Isaiah 54, verses 9 and 10. But again, we're going to go the process. We're going to read 1 through 17 so we can see all the way around it. You got to remember now, at the time of Christ, or at the time of Ezra, or at the time of Luther, when they read these scriptures, just like we're doing, they probably got behind just like we did. Then they had a Nazarite vow so they could catch up. Everybody that, and if we were doing this right, like if we had groups like us all over the world and we're all doing it, then at any given moment, we'd all be studying the same thing. That's the intent. So, all right.
Can I have your keys? I need to make a phone call.
Is that locked?
Yeah, sorry, from the office. Right.
What's just, you can't use this
Because I don't want to, because I have to page the guy, and it's just...
It's a BFD.
Yeah.
Okay. Sing, O barren, thou that did not bear. Break forth into singing and cry aloud, thou that did not travail with child. For more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord. And what does that mean? Anyway. Enlarge the place of thy tent. Let them stretch forth the curtains of thy habitation. Spare not. Lengthen thy cords. Strengthen thy stakes. Now remember, you're just getting out of the ark. And this is what he, lengthen, spare not, start something, do it. For thou shalt break forth on the right hand, on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Again, in the spirit, at Noah's time, everything is destroyed. There's no inhabitants anywhere. The desolate cities are inhabited. By the same principle, in spirit now, the New Jerusalem is desolate in you. Thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed. Remember, we're talking about shame, the shame of Noah. Well, we shall not be ashamed. We shall be. The reason is because we've commended ourselves openly to every man's conscience in the sight of God. There's nothing hidden. Neither shall thou be confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame. Thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. For thy maker is thine husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, the Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth shall he be called. The Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit, and a wife of youth, when thou wast refused, saith thy God, for a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. And in little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but now with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord thy Redeemer. Now the principle here is, and the reason this is read at the time of Noah, is he's saying to Noah that I hid my face from you in that ark. It was rough, but it's better in the ark than it was for those people that weren't in the ark.
Isn't that what it means by rejoice because you're barren? Because
yeah.
All those were the children of the desolate, and the only ones in the ark were the children of the married.
Okay, now that's what it also means now. I mean, don't be confused if not many people believe this stuff, or see it, or say it, or understand it. It's always been that way. It always will be. There's only a few. Why? Well, who knows? It's God's secret. For in a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord, thy Redeemer. For this is as the waters of Noah unto me. For as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more cover, go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee, nor rebuke thee. Now hear that. As sure as there will never be a worldwide flood, he will never rebuke you or be wroth with you. Wrath, I mean, he'll never deal with you in wrath. You understand that?
Is it someone who got buried in the flood?
No, just period.
Really?
He will never be out to get you. You are standing on the firmest foundation. It's like, today was a bad day for the Levites. I went over there. What?
I went over there too. Very solid day.
I went over there. And they were defining, you know, in a foundation, you have to define one place and say that's true, and then you measure everything else on that from that point. They were moving the thing up and down. Wherever they stopped, it was defined as true. I mean, they were doing it right in front of me. It's too complicated, but just trust me. They had no idea it was like a movable foundation. Every foot, it would move another couple inches. I hit the ceiling.
Did it fall down on your head?
No, but it would have. It would have fallen down on Rick's head.
The ceiling is already removed.
I was going to say, yeah, he's the ceiling.
If you could see, you are standing on the firmest of all foundations. Nothing can come against you. You can be attacked with poverty, you can be attacked with lions, you can be attacked with slander. If you stand still and see the salvation, nothing can touch you. But your mind says you're still tossed and turning like these guys in the ark. And that's what your mind does when you contemplate that your moment or this moment should be different than it is. Thou afflicted, tossed with tempest, and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colors, and lay thy foundations with sapphires. I will make thy windows of agates, and thy gates of carbuncles, and all thy borders of pleasant stones. Now, that's each one of you are a pleasant stone, spiritually.
What are we?
One of these stones. And all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. In righteousness shalt thou be established, thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear. The only reason that Daryl ever gets depressed is he gets depressed because he's not succeeding in his own definition of self-divinity.
You hate to hear that.
You know that.
So the Holy Spirit's coming along and knocking his pegs out.
Makes my heart hurt.
Makes his heart hurt. Because of why? Because he's trying to exercise himself in self-divinity. That means control.
I just want to do what's right.
Daryl.
Yes, you're right.
So what?
You don't want to say that, do you? You can
no,
take
I
that
don't
back.
Want to.
Okay.
It's true. It's all true.
In righteousness shalt thou be established. Thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear, and from terror, for it shall not come near thee. Behold, they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake. And do you realize something? That scripture defines a believer. If someone's gathering together against you and they succeed, anyway, behold, I love this one. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals and the fire, that bringeth forth an instrument for his work, and I have created the waster to destroy. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise up against thee in judgment, you shall condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord. Period. Their righteousness, what he's saying is their righteousness is my responsibility. Their righteousness, your righteousness, is his responsibility. That's really what it means to pick up the cross. The practical aspect on a day-to-day basis of picking up the cross means he got it right. I don't have to worry about it. I just shut up my mouth. Okay, that's all. I don't feel like talking anymore. Take a big person.